Save big on your Memorial Day barbecue, all in the Kroger app. Get 3-pound rolls of juicy 80% lean ground beef for $3.49 a pound with a digital coupon. Then get select varieties of flavorful Powerade, Body Armor Super Drink, or Arizona Tea for 77 cents each, all with your card. Shop these deals at your local Kroger today. Or tap the screen now to download the Kroger app to save big today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Prices and product availability subject to change. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
Welcome, Radical Ones. It's another episode of the Radical Retro Rewind podcast. This is Ryan Hunter, and I am joined by my lovely co-host, Rob, the movie geek himself. And we are tackling, for us, the final Friday movie currently.
Hi, everyone. I'm Rob. Good to be here once again. Yeah, Friday the 13th, 2009. What did I say? The final cut, the director's cut, the extended cut, the killer cut.
The killer cut. Did you see any killer cut additives to this? I want to know.
So I own this on DVD, but I don't know if I have the killer cut or not. And there's a long story to that. You're like, why don't you know? Don't you have the box? And no, I don't. But again, longer story. So yeah, I read about a lot of different takes on this, alternative situations and scenes. We will definitely discuss those throughout this discussion. Yeah, I have a feeling I watched the killer cut, so I don't know, we'll see.
Perhaps we both had the same curse, Rob. I too have this reboot, but when I went to go watch it, could I find the DVD that I had 2 weeks ago? I couldn't, so I don't know if I watched the killer cut either. I had to rent it.
So, oh my god, that sucks. Okay, so what I was gonna say, put it this way, and maybe somebody can tell me, the killer cut, if it gives you an option to watch that or the original theatrical version on the DVD, then that was the killer cut. I didn't have that. There was no special features. There was no, and it was just movie, scene, and maybe trailer. I think that was it. That was all I got. So I pushed play and went on. That was it. So
is it possible? Was Blockbuster open? Did I buy my copy Blockbuster? I want to say I had a Blockbuster copy.
That was probably my Blockbuster exclusive copy with no feature. So
we have no idea, Radical Ones, what copy we saw. We see some form of this movie. Like Rob said, 2009 reboot to the Friday the 13th series.
Well, let me get into this right away. So, because we keep using the word reboot. So, technically, let's just on record here that apparently this specific 2009 version is considered a sequel. That is right, folks. Victor Miller, who is responsible for creating this franchise, when it came time to write the remake, they took measures on having the film appear to look like a sequel more than a remake. And this is purely for greediness and money. A sequel will cost less to give to Victor Miller if it is made as a sequel. If it was made as a remake, he gets more cash. So they stylized this to make it look like a sequel instead of a straightforward remake. And that is also the reason why you got sort of a composite, like a combination of highlights of the first four movies all in this one film. It's like the Brady Bunch.
Perfect example.
It's like the Brady Bunch movie. So yeah, given that whole entire sequence during the credits when, you're seeing this woman being chased by this woman, Pamela, he's my son. That was part one. And then let's jump 40, 80 years later. This is what happened afterwards. So now him growing up as a grown-ass man makes sense because it came out in 2009 instead instead of 1980 or whenever it came out. So there you have that. So technically, this is not a reboot. Yes, the story has been changed, but it is considered also a sequel.
And with the franchise history, honestly, anything goes at this point. Once you go to hell and then try to link that to, you know, Jason X, Freddy versus Jason, it all goes to hell. And is this, Rob, why Victor Miller is now, is that what led to the lawsuit? Because he got pissed off?
I mean, that could be part of it, but here's the thing. He also tried to sue to get the correct amount of compensation because of said movie, but he lost. So he was paid less for this remake.
That actually sucks, because this is clearly supposed to be a remake.
But
that's
they
terrible.
Used, yeah, so anyways, that's another conversation. For this one, let me just say that before we get into the review of this film, I'm remembering back then my experience in the theater. Let me say, and I think this kind of holds true for the actual review that we're going to do. Okay, so the trailer really had me super intrigued, because I was like, I've never seen Jason be so aggressive in my life. Like, that was such a surprise that they went that route and made him more of this very highly aggressive, fast-moving killer. There is no chance. Like, I was over the moon with this trailer. Going into this theater, that entire first sequence is, I think, probably the best part of the movie. And it's not to really say anything bad about the rest of the movie. I have never been that terrified of a Jason movie in that first like sequence. That whole entire thing, that the way that every character got tons of screen time for folks who were never going to be seen throughout this rest of this movie, and to give you that full on example of who Jason is in this movie, like, I could not believe the sheer heaviness of these kills and how aggressive this man. It was terrifying. I just liked everything about that first sequence. Like, you got all of it, all of what you know of a Jason film: the sex, the beautiful people, the camp, the story, him taking them out one by one, the discovery of the mom. Like, all of that was in this. It was just so, I don't know. I just loved how this first part was filmed. So I will just say that in this theater, when the name Friday the 13th came up after that first sequence, this theater was like, what are we about to experience for the next 80 minutes?
Damn, I agree. I forgot a lot about this movie. I knew there was the pre-sequence. And Rob is talking about basically, what, the first half hour or 25 minutes of the movie. It's almost like its own self-contained mini Friday the 13th. But we start off with that recap of part one. I like to call her Alice, but she does kill Pamela. And we see that Jason in this version was alive and saw his mother die, which is something that we've heard kind of rumors after the fact. I gotta say, Rob, I loved this first half so much. I think it is brutal. It's like really in your face. So do you think that the second half is where it kind of might wane for you?
Well, it's not as strong. So here's the thing. Even though we got such a short time with these first group of people, I enjoyed them more than the group that we got. The reason for them being in camp searching for the weed. Perfect reason to have these dumbasses in camp after hearing about this legend. It makes perfect sense for them to be there. Also, the five basic horror character tropes were established in these six people. No, seriously, I mean, I don't want to call a whore a whore, but I mean, obviously, you know, the woman of this group, the one who was having sex, clearly she was doing the jock. Then you had, you know, the fool who was all about the weed. You know, he came there single. And then what was the sister's name?
Whitney.
Whitney's the final girl.
And her boyfriend. It was her boyfriend.
Yeah,
right?
It was her boyfriend who was the sensitive one. All of that fit. It all fit. Just again, the tactic of the kills, and they didn't hold back in this first half. Everybody looked terrified. Every death was effective.
Oh.
Like, you also got to see Jason as a tactful killer. Like, he was patient. He set up traps. And again, this whole idea of him being underground without even seeing the tunnel yet. You're like, what is going on? He's already established a way to get from point A to point B. He's under the house sticking. Even the reveal of the head when he grabs it and turns it around. And like, that was some terrifying shit. I can talk about this first part all day. I just thought it was a really good setup. He ran and then hit that dude in the head with, oh, I was like, what? And did you notice his face? He didn't say shit. He watched it. Like, either he just gave up and was like, I know I'm going to die, but he didn't warn her. Jason could have easily hit Whitney, but he hit him instead. But I wonder if he just was like, I'm not going to say, I don't know. That was a little weird little look, but like the sleeping bag, all of that, I just thought was all brilliant.
Does he tell her the run to the boyfriend, to Whitney?
Yes.
When he's pulled down
when he's officially died, he's coughing up blood, like he's getting stuck in the stomach. Like, that's when he's like, you need to run. So good. I just thought that was great. But yeah.
I agree. Honestly, Rob, maybe the fact that I forgot everything about this movie. I feel like I bought the DVD, like we mentioned earlier, but I watched it one time in theaters with brother David, and the only thing I remembered was Jared is in this movie, and that this first half cuts, and then we get the second half to the other. But I agree. I liked every character in this first half. I liked the way they were interacting with each other. I liked the setup. I liked the camp storytelling, and they're all like, oh yeah, you had a friend that went to Camp Crystal Lake. And he's like, no, really well done, Rob.
So one last thing that I'll say about this first part, and may come up later, but Jonathan Sadowski and Ben Feldman, so they were actually casted really late, like almost close to the time of filming, and those two are so close together. Jonathan was added because Ben was just like, me and him are like besties, and their rapport on set and filming go really well, so they just casted those two to like be friends. And you know, they obviously got a really big scene together, so it just kind of worked out. So I really like that about these first half of Kids. You know, I'll just say this right now. Derek Mears, who plays Jason Voorhees in this film, I think he did a phenomenal job. I think he did great. There's certain things that Jason was doing in this movie, and I think it was, again, part of his aggressiveness. He was very soft, but again, when it was time to kill, he would do these quick head moves or these quick turns that would just be like, I'm focused and I'm pissed. Like, there was just something about the way he did it I really enjoyed. So yeah, kudos to Derek Mears. I thought he did great.
So these are all positive things. I wonder, like, going on reviewing this, I'm almost afraid to say that I enjoyed this. Again, my co-host famously says, enjoy what your tastes are and F the haters. But it seems to be disliked, this reboot, in some regards, like rating-wise. But I gotta tell you, God, I'm so sorry, Over Jason Goes to Hell, I think this is a masterpiece. Especially that first, like, Rob, if we could have gotten that for the entire movie, oh my God, so good. So good.
Yeah, there's certain things that happened in the first part that didn't happen in the second. One part of it, I'll just kind of hint at it, is there was a lack of chase and dread.
Yes!
Jason, throughout the rest of this movie, was light as a feather and just appeared everywhere at the right time to sneak behind them and just take them out. Now, that gave me a lot of Mike Myers vibes, which is what I didn't really want to see in Jason because of how aggressive he is. I did want a lot of chase. I wanted a lot of more hiding and is he going to find me? Stuff like that. Half these kids were taken out like that.
You knew exactly it was going to happen because of the way they set it up.
Well, the only surprise that we got was Ryan Jensen's character, who was driving the speedboat. He gets an arrow in the eye. That's probably the only shock that I got for the rest of the film.
Not Willa Ford's breast coming out like we were saying.
I want to be a man.
I forgot that.
I know, that was pretty crazy. I completely forgot about that death. And when it happened, I actually yelled. I was like, oh, I forgot they took him out so early. But yeah, other than that, I think it just lacked a lot of like chase. You know, I remember from the older films or the previous ones is that, you know, there was a lot of running. You know, they didn't have to do the cliche car wouldn't start or falling on the ground or whatever.
Yes.
But there wasn't any chase. Like, we got the violin music to like stretch it out. We didn't get any of that. It was just, I'm here. And I'm about to like stick you with something. And again, we'll talk about those kills in a second. But to me, that was one big thing that I didn't like about the second half.
Do you think that's just more towards our modern filmmaking at the time, especially in 2009? We went through, even zombies became crawling, you know, shambling to running. And then we got this Jason that is brutal in this movie. Not only is he quick, he's so big and strong and forceful. But is that a sign of the times. Did we need Jason to be like this in 2009 to be Friday the 13th? Like you're saying, no running, no buildup, just kill, 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 kill. I have to say, that's one of the things if I had to nitpick about this movie, there's parts that I do like his performance as Jason in this movie, but there's things that I'm like, is this really Jason Voorhees, or is this, like you said, a Michael Myers or another Hills Have Eyes kind of thing? There's things that make Jason Jason, I feel like, and I prefer him a little. Maybe he doesn't have to crawl or walk slow, but to me, he is just like running through these woods, which to me is terrifying. Of course, a giant man in a mask with an axe is going to terrify the crap out of you. But there's parts that to me did not say Jason Voorhees as much as I would like. But I think this is because of 2009, and we're at a point that everything's got to be flashy, fast, 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 kill.
So Ryan, I'm so glad you said that, because I'm sure your listeners know so far, like, and have picked this up from you. You are appreciative of the old school. You just like the classic way things are done. And I think that's awesome of you to keep that with you, because Dawn of the Dead, like, there is a clear divide with the slow zombies versus the fast. And I know where you are at. I know which side you're on. And I totally get that. You can say that it's for the times. I would just say that, and this is one of many possible reasons, is that I think to a horror fan who has watched everything from the 70s on, we're immune. We're a little bit immune to what's going on. Back then, we didn't have cell phones. So when shit hits the fan, you can't call for help. I don't want to see a slow Jason walking around when all I have to do is pick up my cell phone and be like, come get this bitch before he gets closer to me.
Yeah.
And I'm not saying it'll play out that way, but these are things that just sort of have to be updated to make it believable.
That's true. That is true. Good point.
But I'm not saying that a slow moving killer is not appreciated or can't be scary. It just depends on the filmmaker and how it's done. I think it is definitely possible to go back to how it used to be and have like slower, more ambiguous, you know, people who just like disappear out of nowhere once you turn your head. Like, I don't mind any of that, but I think we've just seen enough of it. It's time to kind of shock them, change it up a little bit. And for me, I like this route because it does make you different from what we're used to and what we've seen. I don't want a carbon copy. And so I like that there was more of an aggressive Jason in this one.
Yes, the aggression really heightens things, I will say, because this man is on a mission. Yeah, you know what? That does make sense, Rob, because even with this film, I think that it does change it enough that it does feel fresh in the sense that, yes, we get the key things of the cam, Jason, the teens, but just a little thing like that did change it enough, I feel like, for modern audiences. We cut to weeks later, and Whitney, which is our lead, did she get murdered by Jason in that beginning? Did you think she was dead, Rob, originally?
I mean, I did, to be honest. I can watch it now and look for the heavy, heavy cues to him that she was still alive. And that just goes on basic Hollywood formula. But back then, I didn't even think twice about it. She's gone. Let's move on. I thought she was dead.
Did you think anything at the time, do you remember, of the locket and her looking like Pamela? Or did you think that was kind of just like a throwaway line just to do like a reference that someone could look like Pamela? Oh, we got the Jason 2 throw in there. Like
I really wish that I could remember if I had thoughts about that. I mean, it was a very like subtle line to just throw in, and I'm like, why? But again, she had died, so I just didn't think twice about it. But hearing it now, it makes perfect sense.
But that setup, I mean, there's no way that axe, Jason is coming down on her, so I'm assuming the axe went to the side and Jason snatched her.
Yeah, I would like to see how that all played out, to be honest.
Would you have liked that to be played up a little more with the Pamela thing? Even as a callback, would you have liked her to say, Jason, mother is talking to you? Like,
no.
Something kind of
no,
like... No, you didn't want
so
that.
So okay. Here's the thing. I don't think that these kids knew that much about the lore. So for them to just play into what was going on would have been a little too hokey, a little meta. Like, again, I didn't need a carbon copy of what we saw in the previous movies. I think she knew what it meant for her to stay alive. So she did play into that towards the end of the movie, but I don't think she needed to go a full on, like, I'm your mother. How did you know? Like,
I agree.
Yeah, and it's a good thing that she did catch on to that. I didn't mind that twist. I don't know if you want to talk about that now or you want to talk about it later.
Yeah, let's talk about it.
I don't think I minded that twist, to be honest. We got to know her and I liked her from the beginning. If she had ended up dead, I wouldn't have cried about it. Like I hope there was no focus group out there and be like, how dare you kill this girl? I didn't mind if she was gone. Now, the fact that, you know, Jared was out there, you know, searching for her and being able to complete his mission by finding out that she was alive, I guess that gives him more of this leading man sort of vibe, in a sense of like, we're not going through this entire movie without him at least succeeding. He goes out look for his sister, he gets a girlfriend instead. I don't know if people wanted to see that. I didn't mind the twist, it made sense. What I will say is, okay, so Jared's Clay, right? Clay.
Yes.
I don't know if you noticed this. I didn't notice this until I rewatched it last night and did a little reading about it, that Clay is sort of like a unwanted accidental homage to part four, the final chapter, because there is a gentleman in there looking for his missing sister from a previous movie. Yes. The directors and the writers straight up was like, I had no clue. No idea.
Funny.
They did not do this on
that was.
They did not do this on purpose. They had no idea. It was unintentional 100%.
So just a homage that worked out a little well, because they are basically recapping, as they like to say. They kind of try to combine the first four movies into, for what they did, I think they succeeded in many ways. But Jared as Clay, I mean, a likable, not only, well, take his looks aside, take that he's been like a household name from the Gilmore Girls to Supernatural. Jared is so likable in this movie.
His determination for his sister and just the level of work that he's putting in. And I really thought that the scene with him and the cop was very important, because it's clear he's been through the ringer. And I mean, this is not just a one-off first day, like, I'm going to look for my sister. Like, he's been doing this for quite a while now. And then we also get a little bit of backstory that they even fought. So like, he is very determined to find his family. And I totally get that. So yes, that definitely gave him a lot of points. And the fact that he stood up to dumbass Van Winkle. So,
okay, yes. The second group of teens, no, they're not even teens, kids, men, women. The group of this second group are going to this gentleman's, his parents' summer cabin.
That cabin was beautiful. Oh my God, that cabin was so beautiful.
But like you said, what do they need all them rooms for?
I know. This place is too damn big. You don't even know what's going on under your own roof. But yeah, no, that cabin was gorgeous. But go ahead.
This character was so annoying. Yes, I get that whole thing about you don't want to destroy your parents' house. Of course. Like, Rob texted me last night, how did these characters become friends to begin with?
Yes.
This guy is an asshole. No personality besides, I'm a rich jock, or I'm a pretty boy. Like, that was his one character, and I'm an asshole too. I hated the whole thing about him. I guess is what you're supposed to do. They wanted you to hate him, but
this was a very specific group of kids, and none of them were dating each other. Not one. And Trent tried to, you know, sleep with Miss Panabaker, Miss Jenna.
Were they not together? I couldn't figure that out.
I would say that they were probably dating. She may have accompanied him as a date, but they weren't together. Because when she found out about Bree and Trent sleeping together, like, she didn't bat an eye. She was like, whatever, I don't care. And she made it quite clear she was after some clay dick. Like, quite clear. She was like, I came with these people, but I'm going to search for your missing sister and walk through these woods with somebody I don't know for hours. Like, she wanted some clay dick. Like, it's so they weren't together. They weren't. He just kind of had that expectation.
You?
Fuck you.
I know. Okay. Now, you would. You would.
No, I would not. I would not. Like, I would go maybe a little bit of the way, but they ended up into Nightfall. Like, that, that was too much. Like, I got to go back to the people I came with. I don't know you. Like, I want to help you. It's whatever.
I mean, right? He seems nice, but get me to that cabin. He could have murdered her and raped her.
I know he could have. But no, here's the thing about this, though. Like, even in the gas station, you know, she's like, oh, I'm so sorry. You know, that he's being an asshole. And I'm like, woman, that says a lot about you versus, you know, I cannot stand people apologizing for their asshole friend. I'll say that bluntly. I will judge you to your face. If you are friends with a known asshole who is evil to people that they don't know, like, like, I'm sorry, if you're going to choose that bit of company, that says so much about you. And like, she annoyed me when she did that. I'm like, girl, you are with him. Like, you don't apologize. Like, but I mean, she was a nice girl, right? I liked her.
Yeah, she was a nice girl. But
you know,
again, how did they become friends?
I don't understand how any of these people came friends. Now, the two, you know, Chewy and Lawrence, like, oh my God, those are goals. That's friendship goals right there. You see how Lawrence went out. He knew a killer was outside. When you find out a killer's outside, my boy Chewie's out there. I gotta go. Nobody else went outside but him. Got his Captain America shield. That shit was...
I thought that was so smart, too. I'm like, why didn't anyone ever think of that? Take that big walk as a shield.
So beautiful of him to go out and look for his friend. I just thought that was great.
I mean, I guess the other one... What did Bree and Nolan... Like, they all seem like these laid-back kind of group of people. Did they just go with this dude because he had this summer house? Maybe that's what the thing is. Maybe they weren't even friends with him.
I would say they just lived on the same floor. Or maybe the girls were associated to the group of guys who were friends. I don't know. And here's the thing. I didn't mind these group of kids. I thought they were fun. I like Aaron Yu as an actor, for one. I just think he is so fun to watch. I watched him in this and like Disturbia. Yeah, and I just think he's fun. I really like him. He was also in The Tomorrow People. Do you remember that?
I just, when I looked up his filmography, I said, oh, he was in that show.
Yeah. No, I just think he's a fun guy. I wish I could see more of him, but yeah.
He is one of the most likable. Evan Chewy stands out as one of the most enjoyable.
Yeah. I mean, Lawrence.
I like Lawrence, honestly. I thought Lawrence was great.
Yeah, Lawrence definitely played the token, but they amped that up a little bit. You know, they, you know, showed these other kids what it, you know, careful what you say, you know, because it come off like that. But he rolled it off. He was like, you know, I'm here, you know, I'm bus to study. Oh, you think I'm black because I'm going to do rap? He's like, how dare you? And she goes, oh, my bad. What do you? She's like, yeah, I'm doing rap. Like, it's good to point out, but, you know, he obviously knew they weren't, like, ill-witted.
And Willa Ford, they had her ask that question, right?
Yeah.
Like, I'm the singer, are you gonna do rap?
Yeah.
Like,
I wanna be a man,
make all look so good. Gotta just mention that scene, though, my God, with the catalog.
Oh, my God.
He's looking to pleasure him. There's a part in this thing. And the ransom, he's looking desperately. Like, you know, in those catalogs, there's going to be someone in underwear, right? Like, and then he finds this older woman in this, like, full-length nightgown. It was
he's like this winter catalog. No, he's... He was trying. Yeah. I just, that was funny.
Oh my God. That made me laugh. I completely forgot about it.
So this movie takes place in one evening, right? And I know that in previous Jason films, people were killed throughout like a weekend or something leading up to this final night of like carnage. Since this all took place in one day, what did you think about sort of the progression of the film, like how everything just sort of like were executed, him getting the mask and him attacking everybody? What did you think about the flow of all of that?
With the mask bit, I think that is honestly one of the only ways they could have set up him getting the mask. He starts with the bag head, which I like as a reference to part two, right? Like, okay, so yes, he doesn't automatically get the mask. Like that a lot. But this mask looked like it was first off through hell. It looked like it was perfect for a Friday the 13th reboot because it was like dark and gritty and totally 2000s. But that aside, like him setting up, okay, I'll believe he gets it from, you know, there was a hockey stick there. Ho, ho, ho. It makes sense. I think it had to be in one day for this reboot to work because of the how quickly things happen and how quick Jason is. Like you said, in modern times, someone had to have a cell phone that worked, right? You would think. So it had to happen, I feel, in one day. 1980s, yeah, there's no other communications. Oh, maybe they went off, but we can't text them because God knows where they are.
With that being said, I was trying to wrestle back and forth if I actually appreciated the way everybody was sort of, because the kill count is actually pretty high. So I think that's great. I don't know. There was just something about the timing of it all, because we don't know exactly how often and how much Jason has been killing up to this point. Right. Then all of a sudden, I just want to attack all of these kids at a cabin. It just, I don't know. Yeah. To me, it just kind of came out of nowhere. Now, the gentleman who was in that farmhouse and, you know, he had the hockey mask or whatever. He apparently went out to that same location in the camp and grabbed that weed and brought it back with him. And so this is something that you can see on YouTube, folks. That scene had a completely different execution.
The killer cut?
He did not, that guy who was trying to, you know, sell weed or whatever, he did not die that way. So the cut that you watched, Ryan, he gets his throat slashed when he, you know, he's trying to fight back or whatever. And then he takes the bag off of his head and then he sees his face and he's like, that ain't right. And then he takes the knife and he slashes his throat. Then he looks under a blanket and then finds the mask. Originally, that is not how it happened. So again, you can go on YouTube and see this. So basically, we see him bringing the weed and you see it on the table. So I'm assuming Jason must have followed him and decided to like, take him out.
That makes more sense.
Yeah. And then, you know, you go through sort of the motion with the whole mannequin and the licking of the magazine.
Oh,
I know.
God.
I was like, ew. But here's the thing. Originally, the guy finds the hockey mask and he wears it on his head and he's smoking. He's smoking with the mask on. And then when Jason comes, Jason cuts off his head, takes the hockey mask off of his head and puts it on.
I think that's so much better.
Now, apparently they changed it because the original way there was no suspense if he was going to die or not. So they changed it. I don't know.
Did we really think he was going to survive, Rob? Did they really think that people thought?
Well, it's one of the theories. But the thing is that when you're watching the cut that we got, Jason finds the bag, Clay's bag. And he takes that and the body back to his lair. If you see, he throws the bag onto Whitney and he's carrying a body. The body didn't have a head.
You're right. I noticed that, but I didn't even think.
Yeah, technically, you know, even if it was off camera, you got to assume he cut his head off. But originally his head was supposed to come off, but it didn't. It just got slashed. But then he walks around with a headless body. So they kind of mixed it in continuity wise. If you would have caught it, that's what would have happened. It's nice that he got his mask that way, but the timing, like, why now? It's just so kind of off for me that he just is like, I'm gonna go on a killing spree today
with this. And wear this specifically.
I mean, he could have got that hockey mask anytime beforehand. I don't know what prompted him to go out of the camp, but I'm assuming it's because he followed the guy, and then maybe he was like, I'm gonna close up loose ends, I don't want people knowing I'm here. I don't know, but for some reason he was like, I'm just gonna go after all these people. So that kind of happened. I also want to bring up the Willa Ford death. So this is Chelsea.
Which is so crazy because how did we both hear the same exact... Because when you asked me this, Rob, I'm like, that sounds so familiar.
Yeah, I could just be projecting memories into my head right now. I'm just going to give you a breakdown. I swear to you, because I couldn't find it on YouTube. I was trying to look for a trailer that had this original death in it. So
Smart.
I couldn't find it. Maybe it's out there, maybe it's not. But here's the thing. So Chelsea's character dies differently in the original script. And I thought that this original way was a lot more terrifying for me, just to showcase how ruthless Jason really is. Like, this man has literally only one goal, is that to watch you die and suffer. For those who don't know, the original way that Chelsea was supposed to die is that everything kind of falls into place. Her man gets hit with the arrow. The boat goes out of control. She gets hit by the boat, so she's a little bit sort of like winded. She's in the water. She sees Jason on shore. They're at a distance to where she is terrified to swim anywhere near shore because he's standing right there. Now she's out there and she's waving her hands, her legs, you know, she's trying to stay afloat. This still happened before sundown. This, I swear to you, I saw this in a trailer. It was either a teaser trailer or just some kind of like shortcut of like, this is Jason today, right?
Because they do show that setup that he's there watching. So it makes sense that it could be.
I could have swore I saw a trailer where it was all drawn out. So they show her terrified. They show him standing there. He doesn't move a muscle. And she is just standing there. Suddenly they cut to where the sun has gone down. It's night and she is still in the same spot. Trying to swim and use her muscles and strength to stay afloat. He, again, has not moved one muscle and is staring at her, waiting for her to make a move.
Terrifying, I think.
And when you cut from sun up to sundown and she's still out there, he could have been killing everybody else. Nope, he has not moved. He doesn't care about anybody else
standing
but her.
Standing right there, yeah.
She, from exhaustion, just drowns. Just drowns. Can't keep herself up above water anymore. I remember watching that on somewhere, and I was like, damn. Like, I was like, this is who Jason is? Like, I was like, this movie's gonna be off the fucking hook. But they changed it. She goes under a dock, and she tries to sneak herself away from, like, being, you know, noticed or whatever, but he, you know, he can hear everything, and sticks that machete right in her head, and, you know, he pulls it up, and you can see her breasts and all that stuff.
Getting one more time.
I got a question for you. Do you prefer this death or Paris Hilton's death from House of Wax?
Honestly, I'll take Paris.
Okay.
This death was just so anticlimactic. It just happened so, like...
Yeah, it was really quick. But I appreciated the original version, and I thought I was crazy, but there are lots of people who know about this original death, and you can also find it on, you know, like, things you don't know about the movie or whatever. This is what originally happened. I wish they had kept that, because I just love that scene. It was so good. But I'm glad I'm not crazy, and I'm glad you remembered it, too.
As soon as you said that, I'm like, why does that sound so familiar?
Crazy.
Oh, my God.
Okay, so I want to get your opinion about Miss Panabaker. This whole twist of her dying towards the end of the film. Okay, yay or nay, by standard Hollywood horror standards, she was the most purest, innocent, nice girl in the entire film, and she still paid the price. Do you like that they did this, or do you think that this was a cheap shot and they should have kept her alive?
I think the only reason they killed her is because they had the sister alive still, Whitney, and they were like, no, we can't have two women or two other people survive. I really think that's what it is, because you're right. She was set up to be the final girl along with Clay. But once you threw Whitney in that picture, oh no, 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 no. Matter of fact, she was the last one in that tunnel. That's why she ended up getting killed. I'm surprised Clay went first through that tunnel, because I would have been like, oh no, Jason's right behind. I would have been flying through that tunnel, first off. I remembered it was happening at that moment, and I was like, damn. But it was shocking in the theater. But do you think it was only because they couldn't do the two women? Like, it's the sister and her?
So that is a possibility. I mean, we've seen more people survive in a horror film other than just two leads or whatever. It's in any capacity. Mm-hmm. I honestly think that it was pure just shock value. Like, this was a death that was not to be expected at all. Like, no way, shape, or form did anybody think she was gonna die. And the right. best thing that you can do for that audience is to prove them wrong and to do something different. I think that it was appropriate for her to die. Now, to your point, Ryan, I think that if we didn't get Whitney back, we probably would have seen her alive. So it made it okay to pull that move without people really being angry about, like, change the ending. You know, we can't, you know. So I would have been okay with that. The thing is, though, is that Jenna technically was supposed to survive
that video you sent me. Yeah.
You read this. So apparently Jenna's character was supposed to survive the tunnel part. It was the bus is where she died. She makes this joke saying, like, well, I hope our second date goes a lot better. And this is when Jason comes out and kills Miss Panabaker. But I honestly think there was no choice. They had no choice but to take her out, because she was so, like, a million to one to get out of this alive, and she didn't. Like, the odds just were not in her favor. And I remember this, like, in the theater, we were gagging. We were like, what is this? Like, it, how
that one
dare
hurt
you do
because
this?
She was so nice leading up into this point.
Yeah. And, you know, Clay, look, I know you're on a mission to find your sister. There's nothing wrong with searching for love while you're doing it. Like, when he agreed, like, she was like, do you want some company? He goes, yeah, I would love some company. I'm like, how are you just gonna put this burden on this girl? But he was clearly favoring her. You know, I wasn't mad about it. It's okay to think about your own life. I know you're looking for your sister, but you can still,
like,
get
this
a
man
girl.
Has any trouble finding women? He literally went to a convenience store with a wanted sign, and he found this one. I mean, like,
no, rides a motorcycle. I mean, it all said in his face too. I think that she was mourned in the most appropriate way. Like, he really was devastated
that he
lost her.
He put her life.
He really
well,
was.
I guess she would have died though at the house. probably, I guess.
Maybe. But yeah, I thought that was a shocking surprise. I can appreciate stuff like that. And I like when movies take that sort of risk factor. Like, it's okay to piss us off a little bit, to be honest. I think it's okay. I wouldn't be mad if they killed good people on screen. It's not a big deal. Just have it make sense. I don't think that this was a shock value. I honestly think,
yes.
Well, I mean, yes, it did serve a purpose as a shock value, but I just think it was done in a way was like, I see what you did there. Well played. It wasn't like, oh, I want you to like cry about it and blah, blah, blah. I just think it was like,
plus in real life,
I
like that
you.
Because it's not the cliche of, well, we know in movie terms that this woman's going to survive because she's the innocent sweet girl. I like that shock as well, that holy shit. It makes sense if you're the last person through a tunnel and there's someone chasing you. There's a possibility they might get to you.
So real quick, your thoughts on the underground tunnels. This was supposedly an explanation as to how Jason in previous films, I guess in a meta format, was able to get from point A to point B so quickly without you witnessing him running or, you know, at least power walking. But the underground tunnels, what do you think about this added feature?
You know, I remember seeing this with David again back in the day, and he thought this was so smart to explain why someone like Jason could get from point A to point B. I agree, but I think it takes away a little of the mysticism. Like, I like that mystery. I like that thought of like, oh, it's like Bigfoot. Where does he go? Like from point A to point B. I like the mystery, but it is a smart thing to do, honestly. It's a smart move for a killer. Travels this quickly to get around and grounded in reality. Rob?
I mean, if I was to really like heavy nitpick or whatever, I would just want to know sort of the resources on how
yeah.
he got the lights under there. I mean, maybe most of that was already, I mean, it looked like an underground mine, and I'm sure most of that was already done on in itself. It's just, you know, watching him grow up and just kind of like go through the motions. I mean, I think natural instinct, you would be able to adapt and whatnot. I just would want to know a little bit more on how he was able to pull all of that off. So with that being said, yes, I think it's a great way to kind of showcase, like, you can't pull that shit you did in the 80s. We need explanation. We need like a reason to do so. For a modern day audience, it made sense for them to come up with some kind of like explanation how he did stuff like that. But like setting up the traps and the bells to like let people know, like, I don't know, I would have loved to have gotten more of a, you know, is Jason really like Steve Jobs? Like, is he really that smart? Like, that's pretty amazing. But
when we see the Christmas lights earlier, I didn't like that because it makes him too, I mean, I guess it makes it that he could survive all these years. It makes sense that he's capable of taking care of himself. But to me, it's too like smart. Like, he's plugging in Christmas light. I mean, they do that line that someone's stealing the gasoline, at least to make sense how this man is having power in anything. But I don't know. I like the dumb.
Mm-hmm.
I hate to even say the word dumb, but I like the more naive Jason. I don't like him as a mastermind. I don't know. Again, it's not make or breaker for me at all. But there's something about it that doesn't scream Friday the 13th, but again, this is a quote-unquote sequel, but it's a remake.
Yeah. So I guess one other thing that kind of popped in my head during this that I thought was pretty cool was the tow truck scene.
Oh.
So Trent is on the road. He's flagging a truck down. It stops, but we get no reaction from the driver. So we are led to believe that this could possibly be Jason driving the truck. Now, we're not given any indication that this man can drive. We don't even know where this tow truck came from, if he could drive. But the idea was, does he get on the back of this car? All he saw was
creepy,
a hand
though.
Waving
creepy.
To him to get on. Very creepy. Now, at the moment, I couldn't remember if that was Jason in the car or not. So it did get me. It was an effective scene. We find out that he judged the townie wrong and he could have actually got out of there alive, Texas Chainsaw Massacre style, if he had just gotten in the truck. Because the minute the man saw Jason, he peeled out. And there was enough time for him to get in the truck and take off before Jason got there. I thought that was an effective scene. But here's the thing, I wouldn't have got in that truck. I would have died. When you're hitchhiking, beggars can't be choosers. So I'm being a little bit of a bitch right now.
I'm
being a little bit of a bitch right now. So, I mean, this man stops. He doesn't say hello. Do you need a ride? Are you okay? He just blacks me. Just get on. He doesn't say word. He doesn't look back. And I was like, no, dude, you can't. Like, but again, I'm the one who needs his help. So who am I to judge? But it's like, I can't with that. I can't. He doesn't know what I'm going through, so he feels he doesn't have to do that. But, like, he turns around, he's got,
ventilators
in his nose. I mean, they really made him, like, the weakest guy. I mean, they tried to make it, they made it seem like he was not in any shape or form a threat. And I get it, but still, his approach was fucked
up. No, because you're allegedly that's Jason, but thank God it wasn't Jason, because then I would have been like, the man drives too? But...
Okay, so this ending pissed me off. It pissed me off a lot. A whole lot. First of all, why do you need to dispose of the body in the lake? It made no sense. No sense whatsoever. This poetic send-off to this killer was garbage. I'm so glad it ended the way it did. I was utterly pissed off.
A sequel,
I don't know
right?
What...
Like, totally. That you throw the mask along with him in the lake.
I don't know if this was the only way he was gonna die officially or keep him dead instead of just reporting him to the cops. I don't know. For some reason, they felt they needed to do this. Tamper with the body. Let's just take him to the lake. It was the weirdest thing. But I want to read something to you. The producers went to Comic-Con at the time. They were finished with the movie. They were completed. They've done it all. A fanboy walks up to them and says, first thing, whatever you do in this remake, never ever take Jason's mask off. And apparently this quote, this guy spooked the shit out of them that they went back and reshot the ending. Because they were going, because I think originally they were going to show his face and all of its glory. So when he gets the chain wrapped around his neck and it goes through the shredder, it eventually was going to take off his mask and show his face before he gets cut. Because of this fanboy, they went back and shot it and made sure to keep the mask on because they thought that a lot of fans would agree with this one fanboy who was quite clear not to take his mask off and show his face. I think he would have been stopped the same way. It's just that the mask would have come off as he was getting cut in the head. So I don't have a very huge opinion about showing his face in these newer movies than the ones from before. But again, it does keep a little bit of a mystery and it keeps from humanizing him. I will say that in that brief moment when the bag head came off and they showed a sort of a silhouette of his face, a little bit of sorrow and pity was brought out with me. I wasn't disgusted. I wasn't scared. I felt bad because I know his origin. So I think that would be a reason to keep the mask on.
I agree.
What do you think?
I agree. I'm with you 100%. I agree. Not only does the mysticism, like you said, it makes it more mysterious. Plus, we did get that shot, but yeah, because at the end of the day, it was a child that was made fun of, that was not watched, that ended up not drowning, evidently, but, you know, tortured for being different, which is terrible because, you know, there's kids bullied to this day, of course, at school. So I agree, it would humanize him a little too much. Plus, you want that iconic look of the hockey mask, even to the end.
Yeah.
The ending, Rob. Is this a dream? Is this the dream sequence we get at every Friday the 13th? I'm praying that they were not dumb enough to put him in the lake, like you're saying. Because when the cops come and say, well, who killed all these people? Oh, we decided to throw the body in the lake.
It's weird. But, you know, he jumps out. She gets a scream. I thought it was an effective ending. But at the same time, it's stupid. It's just dumb.
I don't get it.
It just took it out for me. They both agreed to this. It was just the weirdest thing. But let's go through the kill count, though. They purposely decided to have a kill count of 13.
Oh, smart. Smart.
They killed 4 out of the 5 in the beginning. Then you got Farm Boy, group of kids, which is Trent, Bree, Chelsea, Ryan Jensen, I forget his name, Lawrence, Chewy, so that's 11, and then the cop.
Oh, yeah.
And then Miss Panna Baker. So they actually don't even count Whitney as a death. So 13, so she didn't die, apparently.
I think that they were planning for a sequel and that they were going to pick this up like every other one, like, oh, at the end of the canoe, Alice sees Jason, but it wasn't really Jason. Like, I think that's what they wanted to do, but Rob, there's no way after that grinding up his head, because his head, the top of his head was ground up, right?
Well, I mean, part of his brain was exposed. I don't think his head was like fully just sliced into pieces, but yeah, it got a little bit of the brain or whatever, so who knows?
To me, this was setting up a sequel that never happened where he probably was going to be dead, and then somehow the Camp Crystal Lake water brought him back to life.
Yeah.
Only thing that, to me, I agree, the ending is the thing that I dislike about this the most.
So you almost got your wish, Ryan. They tried to include a lot of alums from previous films in this movie. They wanted Tommy to come back. They wanted the actress Adrienne King to come back. They were like, hands down, we don't want anyone from the previous films to be in this movie in no shape or form. This is a new beginning. We want to start fresh. They put a stop to anything that brought back any characters from the beginning. I honestly think that Tommy, I don't know if I wanted to see him in this.
Tommy or just cameos? Just the fact that they were going to bring up cameos of these people, or were they going to play like Tommy? Was he going to be Tommy Jarvis?
I want to say that Tommy Jarvis's character was supposed to be embedded in the story.
Oh, wow.
And just the actress of Alice was supposed to come in. I'm a little Tommied out because he may have been the one to kill him in part four, but he is not an equal match to Jason. So to have him as this constant soul survivor, like, I'm sorry, he's no Andy Barkley. Like, I will march up and down them hills for Andy Barkley versus Chucky, but I'm sorry, Tommy Jarvis and Jason is not a duo I don't need to see in every movie. It's just not my thing. Just not my thing. But you had news about the sequel. What was going on with the sequel news?
Oh, well, the sequel was going to bring back our Derek Mears. It was going to be a 3D movie, I know. They said that the Friday the 13th, 2009, went on to gross $60 million in the United States. And that the Friday the 13th sequel was going to be 3D and called Camp Blood, The Death of Jason Voorhees. It was going to be almost another remake, Rob. It was going to not continue this movie and basically remake it again. And the only thing, there was a script made, the only thing that I read that was really going to be put in it is Jason was going to be more mysterious. We're going to have his footsteps. Like, people are in a cabin, but they're going to hear him running, they said, from miles away, like boom, boom, like a dinosaur basically through the woods. And they were going to be like, what is that sound coming? And they said then they would slowly see him, his silhouette. So it seems like we were going to get this slower Jason in the sense that he was going to be mysterious, but at the same time running, when he did run, it was going to pound the forest. I mean, my God.
Gotcha. Crazy.
In 3D.
Interesting. To be honest with you, this movie, I mean, yeah, our kids saw the cabin, they saw his bed, they saw the mother. But to be honest with you, again, it's just the way that these kills were executed and how he just decided to just go to this cabin and kill folks. It was off Camp Crystal Lake. It wasn't even in the camp.
Right.
This dude could have been anyone. It really could have been any killer that they wanted in this movie. It didn't have to be Jason for this to be executed. The way that they used him in this story, it could have been anybody. So for a sequel and then just have it be as mysterious as you said, like remaking it and all that, like, I totally get it. There's no flow through as far as story to keep going. That's just my opinion. And that's okay. I actually don't think that's a bad thing. It's just that we are used to things that are familiar and we are most likely going to put our money into stuff that we already know that we like. And so had this been a different killer, who knows what it would have made. But here's the thing. We didn't get a sequel because the second week of box office went down 80%. Everybody saw it. They gave it their, you know, their notes, their hot takes on it. And either nobody wanted to see it or the only audience who was really gunning for this movie went out and saw it the first weekend. And that was it. So there isn't a big enough audience to keep going. Now, they made profit off of it. Still, that drop does not say
that's a bad drop.
Need to keep going. That just comes to, do we want to continue to see Jason more? And to be honest with you, I'm okay if Jason is gone. If they bring him back animated. Bring him in a mini series or something.
Let's see, the show they were going to work on. Do you remember that a few years ago? The CW Camp Crystal Lake show that was going to come out, evidently.
I would have been fine with an 8 to 10 episode miniseries of just a 1x1 Jason thing like they're doing with Chucky right now. I would have totally been fine with a miniseries just to say hello and goodbye and be done.
But then it would be a reboot again, probably, wouldn't it?
I'm fine with that. Just be done with it, though. Like, there's, I don't see Jason living past Madonna. Like, it's done.
Well, Madonna's still releasing shit. I
know. That's what I'm saying. Jason is not Madonna. There's not much left in the tank. What can you do with him?
They both got one name.
What can you do with him? You can't. I don't. For me, there's nothing else left. There isn't.
See, I want to get to, and this is one of our final. We're going to do a retrospect, but basically, this is our wrap up. As far as I would go, Rob, is what the writer of part 6 wants to come back with his script. Takes place right after part 6. Jason lives in the 80s. No, excuse me. I think at this point it was going to be 90s. Group of girls, Catholic school girls with a nun in the winter go to Camp Crystal Lake, and it takes place right after Jason lives with that continuity.
Okay.
I like this idea. In the snow, 90s, they said you're going to see the phone booth from part 6 that's in one scene. Like, he's going to connect this, and he has the script ready to go. To me, I think Jason in the snow is a cool concept. And he said basically all these girls, you're not going to know who the final girl is because each one is going to be capable. And you're going to be shocked to find out who the final girl actually turns out to be. I am excited about that. If it actually gets to happen, I'd rather that.
But you're saying you just want one more movie, or do you want a franchise again?
I just want continuation. Like, don't reboot it again. Just give us one random one. See if it works. And if not, let it die.
Okay.
I don't want another Jason 2022 when we finally get the end of this lawsuit, because clearly they're doing this lawsuit to make more movies. Just make a sequel. Don't reboot it. Give us the snow Jason, because I think that's actually I think that's a great concept, Jason in the snow.
Well, don't get me wrong. If they made another Jason movie, I'm going. But I'm not.
Yes.
But I'm not on, you know, the internets, you know, being like, I want a Jason movie. Hurry up. Like, I don't. I'm going to.
No, I agree. I agree. I don't need it.
Yeah. If they make one, I'm going. But I'm just like, whatever. So.
God, we don't need another reboot. The idea with this was Jason was out of the minds of people too long. You kind of have to reboot it in some sense. But in this case, we're in the years of Halloween 2018, where things can be done like that. I'm okay with that. But just one more. Give it a try. Don't reboot it. Say it's a sequel. Just put Jason out there with the hockey mask. We don't need the recap of him drowning his mother. Just give us Camp Crystal Lake, the mask already in tow. Let him kill people and see if it works. If not, let him rest. That was Friday the 13th. 2009.
We reviewed them all, so we'll definitely give you a retrospect for next week and talk about them as a whole. We'll go down our favorites list, and you'll get an idea of what we thought of the entire series rewatching it again. So definitely tune in next week for that.
When you're not hanging out over here, Rob, where can the people find you?
Movie Geek and Proud is my own specific movie podcast in collaboration with Radical Retro Rewind. We are going to be on our very last week of our summer camp and other movie tour. My last film that I am doing next Wednesday is Troop Beverly Hills. Ryan is joining me along with another friend of mine to talk about the 80s comedy, and that'll wrap up my half of the collaboration as we say goodbye to summer camp movies and go back to normal. But man, what a crazy 13, 14 week. Like,
I can't believe we survived.
No, pretty crazy. So yeah, next Wednesday is Troop Beverly Hills. Ryan will be joining us, and it should be a lot of fun. And then we'll be back here to do the retrospect.
And then summer is over, Rob, and we get to go to fall. Yes, we will be doing a retrospect next week. And Thundercats fans, Thundercats, we're going to the last Friday of every month for Double Thundercats again through September on. Things will get back to normal here on the Radical Retro Rewind podcast. You could always find us both on Instagram.
Movie Geek and Proud, all one word for me.
And the Radical Retro Rewind podcast, one word on Instagram. We're also on YouTube, where we have video formats of the podcast and other various things like a Full House conversation or see me dig through old toys. You know, that's always fun. Radical ones, thank you so much for joining us this far. And like Rob said, next week we are doing our little retrospect to sum up the summer. Join us then. Bye-bye. I wanna be ready.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.